That's right. Another shoe.
Yeah, that's another shoe.
We are now. We are going to jump into Sefer VaYikra with both feet. But first, let me just go back to this one verse in Sefer Shmuel in our discussion of the nevuah of Isha Elokim to Eli, where he says to him after a description of the. We talked about Aaron, right? Our last class was about the history of Aaron, where Aaron, the relationship to Aaron, how he starts this nevuah by talking to Eli and saying how the relationship to the kahuna as a whole started all the way back from Aaron in the days of Mitzrayim. And then in Pasuk Chavtet, he says, Lama tiva'atu bezivchi uvimin chatiya shetziviti ma'on, why have you denigrated my offerings, my sacrifices, which I have commanded, v'techabedet banecha mimeni, to give more kavod, more honor to your children than to me, to fatten yourselves up with the offerings of my people. So this accusation of transforming the korbanot into a kind of private domain, self-serving, means of fattening up your kids rather than serving God, is at the core of the harshness of the nevuah of the Puranut, the chet, I should say. And then Pasuk Lamed begins Lachen. The moment you deal with Lachen means therefore. Lachen, now already we get into the Onish. So the first half of this nevuah is the chet, and the second half is the Onish. But this balance between this, the Zevach, the Mincha, the offering which had this purpose of serving B'nai Yisrael, and you've corrupted it into a kind of self-serving mechanism, it tangentially touches upon an issue related to the whole role of Korbanot Hazeh in general, and Sefer VaYikra, which sets out the laws of the Kahuna in particular. And so I thought it would be a valuable digression for a week to look at how the Torah presents the entire mechanism of Korbanot to us, which is the beginning of Sefer VaYikra. Sefer VaYikra is one of those parts of Chumash where by the time we get to Parshat Shavua, to the beginning of Sefer VaYikra, we're constantly looking for other themes to talk about.
They never talk about
They never talk about Sefer VaYikra. They talk about... VaYikra is usually somewhere around Purim, Pesach time, so it gives us lots of opportunities to talk about other things. Nobody really wants to talk about Sefer VaYikra, and so we kind of gloss over it. Although in the old time Cheder curriculum of Europe, when you learned Chumash, the first Sefer you learned was VaYikra.
Interesting.
As little children, the first Sefer they learned was VaYikra, then they learned Bereishit Shemos and Bamidbar.
Is that because kids are into blood and gore?
Maybe also because it was readily accepted then, and also because it was it's so complicated that there's a concept called Girsa D'Ankasa. That which you learn when you're very young stays with you. Mm-hmm. And so if you learn VaYikra when you're young, you just kind of memorize it and internalize it. It stays with you, and then as you get older, you're able to apply the concepts which apply really. So if you think of Matosh, Baal Peh, Mishnah, Gemara, almost a full third, two whole sedarim in the Mishnah, one third of the entire Mishnah deals with laws of the Korbanot and the Beit HaMikdash, Kachim and Taros. Right. So, and then a section of Zeraim as well, so then you add almost half of the Mishnah deals with things that aren't relevant to today's operation, whether it be because they're laws of Truma, Maser, Eretz Yisrael laws, or the Kachim and Taros. And so that's why we have a hard time with these concepts, because they're not relevant today. But nonetheless, I thought it would be an interesting exercise to look at the opening of Sefer VaYikra, in particular because there's a aspect of Sefer VaYikra in the way the Torah presents the material that is, on the one hand, a challenge, and on the other hand, if we can resolve the challenge, I think it fits very nicely into the theme that we are looking at here. So let's turn to Sefer Vayikra for a moment. And right, starting from the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. Starting right from the beginning, Vayikra el Moshe, Vayidaber Hashem elav me'ol mo'ed limor. Moshe, God called to Moshe, spoke to him from the Ol Mo'ed saying. What's the Ol Mo'ed?
The Mishkan.
The Mishkan. The Ol Mo'ed is the Mishkan. The Ol Mo'ed and the Mishkan are interchangeable, correct. The only other time that the word Ol Mo'ed is used for something that's not the Mishkan is before the Mishkan is built. After Chet Egel, Moshe takes his tent, takes it outside of the camp, and calls it the Ol Mo'ed, and the Shekhinah hovers over his tent, and God speaks to Moshe from that tent. The word Mo'ed comes from two words. It comes from the word
Mo.
No. That's not what I mean. The word Mo'ed has two meanings. The pasuk, when it describes the communication between God and Moshe, says v'na'adati elecha sham miben shnei ha-kruvim, that God will meet Moshe there from between the two kruvim. That Moshe, the communication between God and Moshe took place by virtue of the fact that Moshe would come into the Mishkan, v'vo Moshe el ol mo'ed, you would hear the voice of God speaking to him from between the two kruvim that were on top of the Aron. So there is this sort of image. Moshe enters into the Mishkan, and the voice of God, which the kruvim being the conduit for Nevuah, comes down from miben shnei kruvim. Moshe hears the communication. So there's this image described in the Pasuk and Sefer Bamidbar of sort of the meeting between God and Moshe. That is the one aspect of the meeting that takes place at the Ol Mo'ed. That's why it's called the Ol Mo'ed, the tent of meeting. It's the meeting between man and God. The other meaning of that phrase is v'no'adu elecha kol ka'ol kahal. It's the meeting place for the community of Israel, for the people of Israel, which is a pasuk in the beginning of in Parshat Ba'alotcha. Moshe would blow the trumpets, v'no'adu elecha kol kahal. But either way, the idea of the Ohel Moed is that it's called the Ohel Moed because it was the place for the meeting either of the Bnei Yisrael together or between man and God. So it's always a reference to the Mishkan in its role. Okay? And it actually is set in place at the end of Sefer Shemot. The last thing we read about in Sefer Shemot is, if you turn the page, just one page back, the very last thing we read about is the construction of the Mishkan in the end of Sefer Shemot. Parshiot Truma Tetzav VaYakob Pekudei. Last four parshiot are all about the building of the Mishkan, and the last phrase VaYichas Hanan Et Ol Moed V'Chvod Hashem Ale Et Hamishkan. Pasuk Lamed Dalet in the end of Shemot, the Anan covered the Ol Moed, and the Anan, which represented the Shechina, the Kvod Hashem, filled the Mishkan. Moshe couldn't even enter into the Ohel Moed because of the Shechina, the Kvod Hashem, which had filled the Mishkan. And the Mishkan, Yisubnei Yisrael, the Anan would serve as a kind of a signal for when they would travel and when they would rest and they would build the Mishkan. And so the travel through the Midbar would be guided by the Ohel Moed as well, by the Mishkan as well. So there is this image at the end of Sefer Shemot, they built the Mishkan, and the Shechina fills the Mishkan from that point forward. Now, why is that significant? Because if the Shechina fills the Mishkan from that point forward, where is the Shechina moving from? Where was the place of communication between God and Moshe before the Mishkan was built? Harsinai. The moment they build the Mishkan, Harsinai becomes irrelevant. This is very important. The moment they build the Mishkan, Harsinai becomes irrelevant. The Shechina moves from Harsinai to the Mishkan. It will travel with them in the Mishkan. No longer does Har Sinai hold any sanctity or significance for us whatsoever. The moment the communication stops, people could go on the mountain. It has no kedusha. It has no status. It's in a completely irrelevant piece. And never again will the Shekhinah go back to Har Sinai to communicate with Moshe from Har Sinai. The communication now will always take place from the Mishkan. They will be encamped around Har Sinai for another year. They don't leave the Midbar, they don't leave the area for another year till Parshat Baalotcha, which is in the second year. But all communication between God and Moshe at that point is in the Mishkan in the Ol Moed. And so Sefer Vayikra opens with that description. Vayikra El Moshe, Vayidaber Hashem Elav Me'ol Moed Lemor. We are now entering into the period of Ol Moed, the Mishkan. Hashem is speaking to Moshe, and now we have to understand how this Mishkan operates. And so we have the operational plan, if you will, of what the Mishkan is about. The Mishkan is a place not only for communication between in Nevuah, but also for the Avoda, for the Korbanot. And that's what comes next. Daveo B'nei Yisrael, V'yamarta Alehem, speak to B'nei Yisrael and say to them, Adam ki akriv mikem korban lahashem. If a person brings a korban to Hashem, yakriv, to come close, to bring, brings a korban. What kind of a korban does he bring? Mina behema, mina bakar, uminatzon takrivu et korbanchem. So from the outset, the Torah tells us that there are three kinds of animals that could be used for a korban. They are behema.
It's a cow.
Well, so a behema is not a cow. A behema is a domesticated cattle, a domesticated animal. Correct, cattle. I thought you said cow. It's a domesticated animal, which divides into two categories: bakar and tzon.
Oh, sheep and cow.
Okay, bakar is either a cow or an ox, either a shor or par. And tzon is either keves or eis, sheep or goats. Keves is a unique word. Tzon is a unique word. It can refer to either sheep or goats. Keves or eis. There's a third kind of korban, which is a bird korban, which is either torim or b'nei yonah, turtle, doves, or pigeons. And there's a fourth kind of korban, which is a korban mincha, which is meal offering. Those are essentially the sources from which we can bring korbanot. Then, in addition to the different sources that we can bring korbanot from, there are different kinds of korbanot. And now the Torah goes through a listing of all the different kinds of korbanot that we have.
So in modern Hebrew, these words still mean the same things, the tzon and bakar?
Mm-hmm.
They're used for both kinds of animals?
Im ola korbanot min habakar, if the korban is an ola means a burnt offering, and he brings his burnt offering from bakar, from, let's call it,
there's a term for ox or cow,
there's a term for a bovine or a cattle, zachar tamim yakrivenu. For an ola, that animal has to be a zachar, which in this case would be a shor, a male. El petachol moed yakriv oto lirtzono lifnei Hashem. He brings the animal to the ol moed, to the petach, to the entrance of the ol moed. Can't bring it inside yet, because it's not a kohen, right? This is the balabayit, brings it to the entrance of the ol moed. Lirtzono lifnei Hashem, as a korban to be desired by God. V'samach yado avosh ha'ola. This is still talking about the balabayit, the person who brings the korban, places his hands over the head of the animal. V'nirtza lo l'chaper alav. And there's some kind of ritzui, some kind of supplication, vidui tfila, that he must recite in order to have atonement. There's a fundamental theme of all the korbanot that they're related to atonement. And so the person bringing the korban is, whether it be an ola or a shlamim, we'll see different kinds of korbanot for different purposes, but they all share in common this basic notion of atonement. V'shachatet ben habakar lifnei Hashem. then the animal has to be slaughtered. This is going to get a little graphic, so you'll bear with me. Right, the animal is slaughtered before God. V'krivu b'nei Aaron ha-kohanim et adam. The b'nei Aaron, the kohanim, will collect the blood from the shechita. V'zarku et adam al ha-mizbeach saviv ha-shepetach o-moed. And sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach surrounding the mizbeach that is in the o-moed. It's a lengthy discussion in the Gemara based on this verse. It demonstrates that the key part of the avodah that brings that makes the avodah sort of the central moment of the kapara of the atonement that is achieved through the korban is the sprinkling of the blood. The avodat adam on the mizbeach is the most important component of the process of the avodah. I'm not going to get into an explanation of all the reasons for the various pieces, but that should just be aware that is in fact the case. Then the next piece of it is what happens to the rest of the animal. So v'yifshita ta'ola v'nitachot alintachel. The hide is removed, right, so that the hide is separated. V'nitachot, the animal is cut up into its quarters or into its parts. V'natnu b'nei Aaron ha-kohen esh al ha-mizbeach. The kohanim would place fire on the mizbeach. V'ruchu eitzim al ha-esh, and put coal there or wood. And they would burn the various constituent parts of the animal on the mizbeach. And there's other parts of the animal, the innards of the animal, they would wash. And then, burn everything on the altar. As a korban ola. So to summarize, what essentially is the first paragraph is a sample. I'm going to walk you through the schematic of the whole parsha in a moment, but as a sample, what is the Torah describing to us in the context of the avodah of a korban? First is the type of korban, talking about an ola. The second would be, second item on the in the description is what type of animal the korban has to be brought from. So if it's an ola, in this case it's a bakar zachar, right? It has to be male. If it's a shlamim, or if it's or we'll see, we can have a tzon. You can have a korban ola that's a tzon. We're going to see in the next paragraph what that means. Right, so there's, what do you do in each case? So korban ola,
all the steps for the korban,
right? Adam, person needs to know, he wants to bring a korban. So what kind of a korban does he bring? He brings a korban ola. That korban ola can be bakar. And if it's bakar, it has to be zachar. Then we're going to see in a moment there could be tzon. And if it's tzon, what is it? And then we'll see the different categories. Once he brings the korban, he has to do smichat yadayim. He has to place his hands on the animal in order to do some sort of ritzui or vidui, which is the central atonement component of it. Then there is the shechita. And then the kabbalat adam, let's call it the avodat adam, the service of the blood, which starts with the collection of the blood from the shechita, bringing it to the mizbeach. Followed by all of the parts that go
on the
mizbeach. If it's a korban in which a portion was eaten by the balabayit, then there would be a description of how much the balabayit can eat. But right now, in a korban, all of the whole thing is burnt. Now, we already learned a very important halacha, and it's based on the nuance of this paragraph. How much of this is done by the balabayit? How much of this is done by the kohen?
I was going to ask you, who does the shechita? That's what I want to know.
So if you remember the story of Shmuel, that was where the Gemara said that Shmuel walked into the Beit HaMikdash and created a tumult right off the bat, because the first thing he said was that shechita kshera bazar, that a non-kohen is allowed to do shechita. Because the pasuk says, v'ikrivu b'nei Aaron ha-kohanim et adam. That from the Kabbalat Adam, from the collection of the blood and onwards, that's the avodah of the Kohen. So up to here is the Baal HaBayit. And this part is the Kohen. Is that clear? The rest of Sefer Vayikra, the rest of Parshat Vayikra almost is repetitive in almost every way except for the fact that the names change. We're going to see the Ola, the Shlamim, etc., the different types of animals, but the component pieces of what happens when is almost, it's like this repetitive phraseology that comes through the entire Parsha. Balei Kriya realize this because they, when they're reading it and preparing for it, they say, oh, that pasuk just repeats itself over and over. We'll see another example and you'll understand what I mean. Let's take a look at the second example. Pasuk Yud.
Is there a portion to tell us why this keeps getting repeated? This, I mean, why?
So yeah, it's an interesting question. It's a hard question to answer because there is really no consistent pattern as to where the Torah elaborates and where the Torah is concise. It's virtually impossible to get a consistent pattern to that. You know, there are places where the Torah is exceptionally concise and cryptic, and there are other places where the Torah goes out of its way to describe in four parshiot all of the architectural designs of the Mishkan, which is a one-time structure never to be repeated again. So who cares? Right? So it's complicated. But let's go on. Pasuk Yud. Ve'im min hatzon korbano. Now what happens if this Ola is of tzor? So this is Ola Olat Bakar. It's referred to as Olat Bakar. And now we have Olat Tzon. What if it's Olat Tzon? Min haksavim o min ha'izim le'ola. Either keves or ez, sheep or goat. Zachar tamim yakriveno. Has to be a male.
Why is that so important?
So, because different animals are different korbanot. The details of why each one, there's a whole machlok that we showed in between the Rambam and the Ramban, whether there's any rhyme or reason to the details. The Rambam was of the philosophy that there's zero rhyme or reason to the details. It's just the Torah had to do it one way. If it said it the other way, we would say, why is it the other way? Mm-hmm. All right? So, in the end, Torah had to make a decision. It can't be arbitrary.
So, is all the korbanot cloak?
Again, that's a big machlokas between the Rishonim. Ramban, they all get involved in this discussion, which is important but not relevant to this discussion. So I'm going to leave that for now because it's a whole.
You can certainly understand why you don't want to teach this.
Actually, I understand more why we teach it when we're young.
I think so too.
Right, because kids have no problem with this. They just learn it. They learn it. They internalize it. They recognize it. They memorize it, and they move on. And it doesn't bother them in the least.
Except for
Nino. I'm talking about when they're 5 or 6. I'm not talking about when they're. V'shachatato al yerech hamizbeach tzafona lifnei Hashem. Bring the olat tzon to the Mizbeach, to the north side of the Mizbeach, and there it would be slaughtered.
What's Yerach?
Yerach is a side. Oh. Yerach Yerkatah Mishkan. Yerach HaMizbeach Tzafon is the north side of the Mizbeach. V'zarku b'nei Aron HaKohanim et damo al HaMizbeach Saviv. Same idea. You take the animal, you bring it into the Beit HaMikdash, there's a shechita that takes place, you take the blood, sprinkle it on the Mizbeach. V'nitach oto lintachav. The animal is then divided into its constituent parts. Et roshov et pidro v'yarach ha-kohen otam al ha-itzim asher al ha-esh asher le-mizbeach. Certain parts are brought on the mizbeach right away. V'yakera v'akva'ayim yichatz b'mayim. The innards are washed first and then brought on the mizbeach. V'yikud ha-kohen at ha-kol v'yikdir ha-mizbeacha olahu ishe reach nechoach la-Hashem. It's a subset of the psukim from the previous paragraph. Some psukim are left out, but essentially it's the same process, virtually same sequence. The only difference is that we're talking about what tzon is it, keves or ez. And again, zachar. Pasuk Yudalid. Ve'im min ha'of ola korban ola Hashem. Third category of ola. Olat ha'of. person brings a
pigeon or dove.
Yikriv min atorim o min bnei hayona et korbano. Yikrivu akohen et hamizbeach. Now the only difference is that with fowl in the mikdash, chicken, in this case pigeons or turtle doves, were not slaughtered the same way animals are slaughtered. Right? L'halacha, we slaughter all animals the same way. We do shechita for behemoth and for tzon or for sheep the same way we do shechita for chicken. In the mikdash, shechita for chicken was not done, or for fowl was not done the same way as it was for animals. It was done in a reversed process. Instead of shechita from the front of the neck, shechita was done from the back of the neck, and it was done in one process, where the shechita was done directly against the mizbeach so that the blood could be collected and sprinkled on the mizbeach at the same moment. It was just, the animal was too small to collect the blood and then bring it over. And so malak et rosho, milika, it's a different kind of shechita. It was done by the kohen. It was done in a different mechanism. It was done from the back of the neck instead of the front. Details that are not relevant for us.
Why does the kohen do that one but not the
because
other?
Because it had to go straight onto the mizbeach.
So there's not two stages.
The dam was already found. The malika was done against the mizbeach, and the dam was already there. And there are different parts of the animals described in a bird than there is in a cattle, and therefore there was. I am going to ask for your indulgence. If you want to get to the message of all of this,
I need your cooperation for this.
V'shisarto b'chnafav le'avdil v'ktirato akoen ha'mizbech al ha'etzim. All right, the rest of the details of what they do with the fowl, with the bird, is not relevant. But, so Perek Aleph, essentially, if you had to summarize Perek Aleph, basic theme of Perek Aleph.
It's the three
different types. How does
it bring?
How carbon is made?
Which carbon?
Ola.
And the Torah then defines three different kinds of Ola. I'm going to erase all of this for a second. Olat Bakar, Olat Tzon, and Olat Ha'of. In each case, the Torah is concerned with A, what kind of animal? What process we talked about Adam ki yakriv. What kind of process the balabait is involved in.
And then the Kohen
enters into the picture with the shechita or post-shechita, the dam, and then the haktara al mizbeach, the burning on the mizbeach. That's equal, sort of unique to each one, but nonetheless sequentially described for the bakar, for tzon, and for of. Perek Aleph. Perek Bet. Perek Bet, the vegetarians like better. The nefesh ki takriv korban mincha la'Hashem. Person wants to bring a korban mincha. So now we can erase all of this. Perek Bet. Perek Bet, nefesh. Perek Aleph was Adam. Perek Bet is nefesh. Whole discussion as to why Korban Mincha starts with the word nefesh instead of the word Adam. You get very philosophical on these things. Perek Bet. Mincha. What kind of mincha offerings? What is a mincha offering? Says the Torah, nefesh ki takriv korban mincha la'Hashem, solet iya korbano. The korban has to be made from
flour.
V'yetzakaleh shemen, upon which you pour oil. V'natan aleh levona. And then there's this thing called levona, which the fancy translators translate as frankincense, some kind of spice that was added to this flour and oil. V'yaviyah ebnei Aaron ha'kohanim, they would bring it to the kohanim. And here there's no shechita and there's no avodat adam. So in the right. So in the korban of the mincha, what do? The kamatz misham melo kumtso, the kohen would take a portion of the mincha, a fistful kometz is a kind of fistful. In halach, it's actually 3 fingers worth. So they would dip the kohen would dip his hand into the mixture and then release anything that was between his pinky and his thumb. And what was left in his 3 fingers is called a kometz. It's an amount of flour. Misoltau mishamna al kol levonata, this mixture of solet, shemen, and levona. And that mixture, that kometz, ki ktira kohenet azgoetah mizbecha isherech nechoch l'Hashem, that was brought on the mizbeach. What about the rest of it? V'hanoteret mena mincha l'aron l'vanav kodesh kodeshim meshe Hashem. The rest is called kodesh kodeshim, the rest is given to Aaron to eat. The korban mincha has the status of kodesh kodeshim. All the korbanot divide into different categories of korbanot. There's basically two. There's korbanot that fall into the category of kodesh, and there's korbanot that fall into the category of kodesh kadashim. Kodesh kadashim is eaten within a certain amount of time within the confines of the mikdash, and for the kohanim, kodesh kalim, or lesser degree korbanot, are eaten by others as well. Eaten in a larger expanse of space outside the mikdash and eaten for a slightly larger period of time, but they also have rules about what they can be done.
So I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do the kohanim eat from the...
Yes, they eat from the... After the portion is brought on the mizbeach, the kometz on the mizbeach is equal to the...
I'm talking about the ola.
No, nobody eats of the ola. The ola is brought to the mizbeach.
Okay.
V'chi takriv korban mincha ma'afet tanur. Now, what happens if you take this korban mincha and you make it into a and you make it on a tanur? So, what makes different kinds of minchas, or 5 kinds of minchas, what defines each characteristic of a korban mincha, says the Torah, is the mechanism by which the flour and oil are baked or fried, the various formats. So, you can make Ricky came and you can make matzot, you can make them into flat matzah, you can make them into kind of a cracker, a wafer kind, you can make them in a machvat, you can make them in a frying pan, you can bake them in a tanur. In all cases, there are different ways of mixing this flour and oil before it's brought on the mizbeach. That defines 5 different kinds of mincha. So the first is called minchat ma'afet tanur, where it was baked in an oven. Solet chalot matzot blulot b'shemen u'dukikei matzot meshuchim b'shemen, matzot mixed with oil, and wafers also matzot sort of covered with oil. In all cases, none of the korban minchas could be made of chametz. One of the halachot we'll see in a moment, you could not bring chametz on the mizbeach. They all had to be matzot.
So that means they had to be cooked within a certain amount of time?
Yeah, all the rules of chametz applied. Pasuk hey, ve'im mincha ala machvat korbanecha, if you brought the mincha on a frying pan, on a machvat, then solet blula b'shemen, then you would take the flour, you would mix it with the oil, matzatiye, again it would be matzah, patotota pitim, and then you would crunch it up into pieces, and pour the oil over it, and that's how you made the mincha. Different mechanisms need to know how to prepare this korban mincha before the kohen would take his kometz and put it on the mizbech. Thirdly, v'minchat marcheshet, if the mincha was a marcheshet, marcheshet is also some kind of a frying pan that is of a different style. Solet b'shemen te'aseh. And in all these cases, ve'eveta t'mincha she'aseh me'ele la'ashem, take this mincha that you made, whether it be mafet tanur, whether it be a machvat or a marcheshet, v'ekriva la'kohen, you bring it to the kohen, v'egisha la'mizbeach, and you bring it to the mizbeach. The Kohen would take the portion that was the azkara, that was the portion that was on the mizbeach, and would bring it victor mizbecha. Pasagud vanoteret mina mincha, that which was left over, la'aron ulevanav, would be for Aaron and his children, for the Kohen im kodesh kodeshim. Kol mincha shetakiv la'ashem lo teseh chametz, and there's a separate halacha that you're not allowed to bring chametz as part of a korban mincha. It has to be matzot, not chametz. Skip the rest of this for now. Important but not relevant for us. Then there's a minchat bikurim, pasuk gedalet, which is also a kind of mincha, and I'm going to skip now to pasuk perek gimel. So perek bet essentially dealt with perek aleph.
What's the ola?
The ola,
Perek Bet
Mincha.
Mincha. And now we get to Perek
Gimel. What's Perek Gimel? V'im Zevach Shlamim Korbano. If the korban is a shlamim. The fundamental difference between a shlamim and an ola is that a shlamim was a kind of a korban that was voluntarily brought by the balabait, and then the balabait ate the most of the korban. The most of the animal was given back to the balabait to be eaten. A portion was given to the kohen, and the rest was given to the balabait together with his friends to eat the shlamim. Okay? Vim zevach shlamim korbano. Again, same sequence. Im min bakar hu makriv. What if it's a bakar? So if it's a bakar, where we say with the ola, an ola had to be zachar. Mm-hmm. Here it's im zachar im nekeva. Zachar or nekeva. Par or shor. Tamim yakrivenu lifnei Hashem has to be brought. The animal has to be whole, unblemished. The rest of this paragraph is samach yadoa rosh korbano ushchato petach ol moed v'zaku b'nei anakonim et adam. Exactly the same as we had by the ola. The sequencing is the same. It's just repeated here for each korban separately. Only difference is that there is a portion that's given to the balabait, which we'll see a little bit later. Next paragraph, pasuk vav, v'im min atzon korbano, if the shlamim is tzon, zachar or nekeva, again the same sequence, zachar or nekeva, im keves, or kesev humakriv, he kriv otol lifnei Hashem v'samachet yatoros al korbano v'shachat otol lifnei moed. All of the same halachot apply. V'im pasuk bet v'im ez korbano. Right, we said son is either keves or ez, sheep or goats. So similar halacha v'samachet yatoros al roshov v'shachat otol lifnei Hashem v'zaku ben Aaron atamo. Same sequence. What kind of animal you bring, where you do the shechita, and what the coin then does with the rest of the animal.
The parts are a little different.
Parts are a little different, but I'm not.
I don't really care about
that. So why would you not always want to bring the korban shlamim?
There are certain requirements for which you bring a korban olah, and certain requirements for which you bring a korban shlamim. This is what the Torah hasn't described here yet is when you bring what. It's talking about in categorical terms.
What they are.
What they are. What is the context of if a person is required to bring a korban ola, or a person is required to bring a korban shlamim? Like it could be an individual, it could be a kohen, it could be the there are various times.
You have to bring the prescribed korban.
Right. So when you are bringing one of these, then you
this
can.
This is the process.
The only two that are. A person can voluntarily bring the ola. And he can voluntarily bring a shlamim. That's called a neder or a nedeva. Why would you bring an olah over a shlamim? Well, an olah is more expensive, but has a different value, has a different purpose. It's a whole different conversation. Dalet. What is dalet? Dalet gets a little more complicated because perek dalet. D'may deber Hashem Moshe lemor, daber al bnei Yisrael lemor, nefesh ki techeta bishgaga mikol mitzvot Hashem. What's the context here?
It's a sin offer.
You made a mistake.
Sin offer.
But it's bishgaga.
It's an
accident. All sin offerings are brought for a chet bishgaga. You can't bring a sin offer. You cannot bring a korban chatat for a chet b'mezid. There is no korban for a chet b'mezid.
A deliberate one?
Right.
Yeah.
There is no korban. If it's a death penalty, then it's a death penalty. If you did it b'mezid, then it's a death penalty. If it's not a death penalty, then there's... The korban chatas is essentially a korban that is brought for any transaction which, were you to have done it intentionally, would have been a sin that carried with it the penalty of karet. But because you did it bishgaga, the alternative is a korban chatat. That's essentially the context of
how. Here's my problem with that. Because when I think of chet bishgaga, you don't know that you necessarily did the chet.
No. Shkaga doesn't mean you don't know you did the chet. Shkaga means, Shkaga means v'nada'a avono. If he's aware, if he doesn't know, like he's completely accidental or that wasn't even aware of it, then it's a whole different context. But shkaga means you were either accidental, you forgot yourself for a moment, you forgot it was Shabbos. Take Shabbos, for example. or Yom Kippur is a bit better example, because Yom Kippur is a curse. You forgot it was Yom Kippur, and you went and you did something that you're not supposed to do. Then you realize it was Yom Kippur, so now you did something you weren't supposed to do. It was an accident, so now you have to bring a Korban Chatos. That's how it works. Korban Chatos, by definition, is Bishkaga. There is no Korban Chatos for a Mezid Avera. Mezid Avera carries the penalty of a Mezid Avera. There's you can do tshuva for
it's
it, maybe.
It's an interesting thing because, you know, we all make excuses for ourselves. Oh, we really didn't know we were doing it, or, you know.
But so in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you'd have to bring a Korban Chatos.
Based on the person's admitting, like.
The assumption is that it's a major operation because it forces you to think twice before you do anything.
Right.
You're far more aware of what your actions are if you realize that even an accidental or a misguided action will cost you a fair penny to bring a Korban Chatos.
A consequence.
Nefesh ki techata bishkaga b'kol mitzvot Hashem ha-shalot ha-sena v'yasa me'achat mehena. We now go into categories. So the first category is im kohen ha-mashiach yecheta le'ashmat ha'am. Let's start from the top. What if the person sins, the person we're talking about is the kohen, kohen gadol. Kohen gadol does a chet bishkaga. Not only is it a chet bishkaga, but the chet we're talking about is a chet in which everybody followed suit. They all did what he did, and now they've all sinned, but he was the one who paskened, he was the one who led them. Then he krivet chatato asher chata. He has to bring his korban. What korban does he bring? Here, the kohen gadol is not acting as the kohen. He's the balabait. He's the chote. He's the sinner. So he has to bring a chatat. What kind of chatat does he bring? Par ben bakar tamim l'Hashem l'chatat. He has to bring a par. Okay. What does he do with this par? All discussion. He has to bring this part to the Omoed. He has to put his hands over it. He has to do vidui. He has to slaughter it. Then he can switch roles. Then he can go and he take the dam and he can bring the rest of the avoda. I'm going to skip the rest of the avoda because it's not relevant for our discussion.
Was this supposed to prove that the kohen is like?
No, they're getting all kinds of categories. It's not specific to the kohen. All kinds of right? Kohen
no,
is
but
one.
This is saying that the kohen does this. It's not just everybody.
We're
going to
say we're going to get there. It includes everybody. It starts at the top. Next paragraph. Pasuk Yigimel. V'im kol adat Yisrael yishguven elam davar me'enei kahal v'yasu achat mikol mitzvot Hashem shelo ta'asena ve'ashemo. If the sin was committed by all of Israel. How does all of Israel commit a shigaga, not knowing ne'alam davar, and v'noda'ah ha'chatat she'chatu aleha pasuk gedalit, and then they found out about it. So who is responsible for a chet which all of Israel did, and then they found out that it was the wrong thing to do? It's essentially a way of saying if the Sanhedrin paskin the shaila and they paskin the wrong way, and now everybody violated this halacha because everybody followed the rules of the Sanhedrin, the same way the Kohen Gadol, in this case it's this Sanhedrin. So, that responsibility falls on the Zikinei Ha'edah, the Sanhedrin. Yikrivu ha-kahal par l'chatat. How does the kahal bring a par for a chatat? Samchu Zikinei Ha'edah et yidahem arosh par. Who's going to do the smichat yidahim? Who's the bala bayit here?
Zikinei
Ha'edah. V'shechat et par. From once the shechit is done, who takes over?
The
Kohen Gadol ve'vi Kohen Hamashiach midam aparat or moed. The avoda here; these are very public korbanot. These are called par helam davar shabitzibor. This is a par. This is a korban chatat for something which all of Israel committed, not an individual. So, because it was very communal, it's very public. The Kohen involved here is not just a Kohen, but rather not bnei Aaron a Kohenim, but rather Kohen Hamashiach, the Kohen Gadol. Next paragraph. So we have the Kohen Gadol Chet, we have the Ziknei Eidah, the Sanhedrin, Parhel and Dovah Shabbat Tzibur, and the last category, Asher Nasi Echata. What if the person is the Nasi? Who is the Nasi?
The governor.
The head of each tribe. Oh. In Sefer Shoftim, we called him a Shofet, right? The head of each region, a regional political leader. And he, Ve'asa Achat, V'kol Mitzvot Hashem, Elokav Shelo Ta'asena Bishkaga, Ve'Hashem, similarly, does a Korban, he does a Chet, Bishkaga, and then knows about it, then he's told about it, he finds out about it. He brings a different kind of chatat, a seir izim. He brings the korban. He has to slaughter it. There's a theme that I've skipped for now, but one of the interesting observations in this entire chapter is that the shechita of the korban chatat is constantly referred to as do the shechita of the chatat in the place where you did the shechita of the ola. There's a lot of different Torah about that idea, that the Torah required the shechita every type of animal had a different location. So the ola was in one part of the courtyard of the Mishkan, the shlamim was in a different part of the courtyard, the mincha was in a different part of the courtyard. Part of that was to keep the categories separate so that the people wouldn't confuse them. The chatas didn't have its own circle. That's the ola circle, that's the shlamim circle, that's the mincha circle, that's the... The chatas didn't have its own circle. The chatas was performed in the same place as the korban ola. Why? So they say it was a kind of observation to the, or nod to the sensitivity of the korban chatat. Somebody shouldn't say, oh, that's the circle for the sinners.
They need to point them out.
Right, because they can't point them out, because they're standing together with all the people who are bringing the korban ola, so there's no distinguished place for them. Next category. What if the chet is done by the ordinary yankel on the street?
Common person.
And then he finds out about his chet. He has to also bring a chatat. His chatat is a si'ira. So in each category, what is the Torah focusing on?
The sins of every...
The person
who did it. Who did the sin?
The kind of sin we're talking about, and the circumstances leading to the requirement to bring a chatat, and the kind of animal that is brought, which fits into, could be a si'ira, it could be in the next paragraph, in keves yevi korbano, it could bring a keves. Also, it has to be in the keva, and then perek hei, which is a continuation of the discussion of a korban chatat, very specific kind of korban chatat called a korban asham. I'm going to skip that for now. You get the idea. All of that, in a nutshell, is parshat va'yikra.
And it is not surprising that the kohen is lumped with everybody else when he sins.
No.
I mean, he doesn't need to be held in any higher madrega.
Well, he has a different korban. The korban gadol has a separate korban. If he sins in a way that makes it right, like the nasi or the sanhedrin, right, those are all leadership roles that have a separate korban. And then there's the other. Then there's a fine. I mean, he is held in a different. In that regard, if the chet is related to the responsibility of his office, then there's a different korban.
You don't have korban todah. Is that in there?
Yes, I skipped that. That's in shlamim. Part of the discussion in shlamim is todah. It's there inside Parag Gimel.
What's
Hashem V'Talui? Hashem Talui. So again, I skip Parag Hei. Parag Hei has a whole bunch of different discussions of Korban Hashem. Various types of Korban Hashem. What is an Hashem? It's a subset of the Chatas, but it's complicated. I have 15 minutes, They translate one as a sin offering, one as a guilt offering. It's a subset of a chatas. It's a much more specific kind of chatas for very specific kinds of averos, but it's this kind of chatas.
But it's still considered five korbanot. It's separate from the chatas is separate.
Ola, mincha, shlamim, chatas, nashim. Correct. Right. But you get the idea, right?
Yeah.
Now, let's take a look at the beginning of Perek Vav. Beginning of Perek Vav is Parshat Tzav. And something happens in Parshat Tzav, which is very interesting. So far I've done a walkthrough of Parshat Vayikra.
Yeah.
What happens in Parshat Tzav? Tzav et Aaron v'et benav lemor. Command Aaron and his sons saying, Zot Torah Ta'ola. Everybody with me? Give me a paragraph. This is the law of the Ola. He Olal Mukda. The Ola is brought is on the Mizbeach, on the fire. Ala Mizbeach kol halayla has to burn all night long until the morning. It's completely consumed. Ve'esh ha-Mizbeach tukat bo. The esh, the fire of the Mizbeach, completely consumes it. And in the morning, the Torah goes on to describe how the Kohen has to take special clothing, take the ashes of the Korban Ola, remove it from the confines of the Mikdash, take it outside to a place that's Tahor, then come back into the Mikdash, wash himself and purify himself, and then put on his Bigdei Kohuna. That's the Torah of the Ola. Next paragraph. Pasuk Zayin. Zot Torah Mincha. This is the Torah of the Mincha. Hakrevata b'nei Aaron lifnei Hashem al pnei Mizbeach. The Kohanim will bring the Mincha to the Mizbeach. Ve'erim imenu b'kumtso. And take off of the Korban Mincha a portion called the Kometz. Misolat ha-Mincha u'mishamna. From the portion of the Mincha and its oil. Ve'et kol ha-Levona asher ha-Mincha. With all of the Levona. Viktir ha-Mizbeach reach nichoach hazkarata. And bring in the Mizbeach a portion that is the reach nichoach. That is the askara that is burnt on the Mizbeach. As for the rest of the Mincha, v'hanoteret mimena yochlu Aaron v'anav, the rest of the Korban Mincha can be eaten, consumed by Aaron and his sons. Matzot te'achel has to be eaten in a state of matzah, b'makom kadosh, and it can only be eaten where? In the Mishkan, in the Mikdash, because it's kodshe kodshe. B'chatzar o mo'ed yochlu, it has to be eaten in the confines of the
courtyard.
Of the courtyard. Lo tefech chametz, can't bake it into chametz. Chalkat natati otam meishai. Kodesh kodeshimi kechatat v'cha Hashem. It has the status of kodesh kodeshim, like a chatas, like an asham, has to be eaten in the area of the mizbech. Kol zachar b'vnei Aaron yochalenu. Whom amongst Aaron's descendants are allowed to eat the kodesh kodeshim? The zachar. Chok olam l'torotachem meishai Hashem. And if you touch it, then you have to become purified. You have to be, it has kedusha. It can only be it can only be eaten by somebody who's in a state of tahara. That's with regards to the mincha. Skip the next paragraph for a moment. Then we have Daber al Aaron vel Daber Hashem Moshe lemor Daber al Aaron vel Banav lemor Zot Torat haChatat. Now we have the law of the Chatat. The chatas has to be slaughtered in the same place that the ola is. Kodesh kodeshim hi. No, if it's kodesh kodeshim, what's the rule? Where you can eat it and when you can eat it. Hakohen amechateh ota yochalena b'mkom kadosh tiachel b'chatzar o moed. You can only eat it in the kodesh. You can only eat it in the mikdash. You can only eat it in the chatzar. Kodesh sheyigab b'vsra yikdash, etc. And who can eat it? Correct. Who can eat it? Where you can eat it? When you can eat it? Those are the laws of Kodesh Kodashim. If you go down to Shlamim, if you go down to Pasuk Yud Aleph, you'll see Zot Torat Zevach Hashlamim Hashiyakriv LaHashem. There are different kinds of Shlamim. Imal Todah Yakrivenu. There can be a Toda, which is a Shlamim together with 40 Chalot Lechem Chametz. We'll skip that for a moment. Pasuk Tedvav, u'b'sar zevach todah b'shlama b'yom korbano yeachel. He has to eat it through the day. He can eat it the day and overnight, but he can't leave it to the morning. That's a todah. Pasuk Tetzayin, v'im neder on a davah zevach korbano. But if his shlamim is not a todah, but it's some sort of voluntary offering of a shlamim, v'yom akrivu etzivcho yeachel u'mimocharat. Then he has 2 days to eat it. He can eat it that day and he can eat it the next day. In other words, what's the Torah going on to describe here? For each korban.
It's very specific. How you can eat it. When, where.
So you'll ask me a simple question. Now that I've got all that information on the table, so ask me a simple question.
Does this have to do with what we're learning?
No, that's not the simple question. That question I'll come back to in a second. But what does this have to do? What's the simple question?
How can they eat all this?
Well, it's a challenge to eat all this.
Why is it so important?
It's important. Everything's important.
I mean, I just keep thinking about the Sons of Aaron.
We'll come back to the Sons of Aaron.
But
the simple question here is, we already discussed the Ola.
So we're repeating.
Right. We already went through the laws of the Ola. And we already went through the laws of the Toda. And we went through the laws of
now
the Shlomim.
You're getting in when you can eat it and where you can
Correct.
Eat.
So I have two separate descriptions of the Korbanot. I have a description of the korbanot in Perek Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, He of Sefer VeYikra, which describe in detail, maybe too much detail, but in detail, every component of the korban you can imagine. And then in Perek Vav, the Torah goes back through the whole sequence to tell me, for each korban, where the kohanim can eat it,
when?
Part of the animal the kohanim can eat,
when?
Who can eat it, and when. Now, it's three psukim for each korban. It's three extra psukim per korban. If you take a look on the page that I've given you, what I've given you here is a schematic outline of all of Parshiot VeYikra and this first parak of Parshat Tzav. So the right-hand side is basically everything we went through in Parshat VeYikra. VeYikra Moshe VeYidaber Hashem Elav Me'o Moed Lemor Daber Bnei Yisrael Ve'Mata Lehem Dam Ki Yakriv Mikem Korban LaHashem Min HaBehema Min HaBakar Min HaTzon Takriv Yot Korbanchem. And then in structure, Im Ola Korbano, second paragraph, Nefesh Ki Takriv Korban Mincha, third category, Im Zevach Shlamim, fourth category, Nefesh Ki Techata, fifth category, Nefesh Ki Techata Ve'Ivi Et Ashamo. Do you see the sequence?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Left-hand column is Parshat Tzav. Paragraph by paragraph. Zot Torat Ha'Ola. Second paragraph, Zot Torat HaMincha. Third paragraph, there's a middle paragraph there which talks about a particular kind of mincha which the Kohanim had to bring every day. It's kind of like a Kohen morning avoda, which we're going to skip for a moment. Next paragraph, Zot Torat HaChatat. And the last paragraph, Zot Torat HaHasham. All of those are Kotche Kadoshim, can be eaten by the Kohanim, eaten only in the confines of the Mikdash, etc., except for the Toda, which has its unique status. And then, Torat Zevach HaShlamim, which was Kotche Kalim, and therefore could be eaten for 2 days, etc. And even a concluding sentence, Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Zot HaTara La'ola L'mincha V'lachatat V'la'asham V'la'miluim U'lezevach HaShlamim. So it's a complete repetition of the structure and categories of korbanot that we had in Sefer in Parsha VeYikra, paragraph by paragraph. The only addition here is who can eat what, where, and when. So why didn't the Torah put those laws together with these laws? That's my first question. You understand on the issue? Now, I'll go one step further. If you look at the opening introductory statement to each section, you'll find that the laws were stated to two different groups. Vayikra Moshe vayidaber Hashem elav me'o moed lemor, daber el
Bnei
Yisrael. Why is all of Parshat Vayikra stated daber Bnei Yisrael? Thought it's the laws of Kohanim.
So they'll understand.
Because aren't we Goy Peresh? Nice try.
It's not so they'll know what to bring?
What's the substance of this whole right-hand column? What's the message here? What's the theme?
Different korbanot.
And who brings those korbanot?
The Balabite.
Bnei Yisrael.
Yeah. So it should be addressed to
Bnei Yisrael. This is the user manual for korbanot that's given to Bnei Yisrael.
Adam,
yes, Adam ki yakriv korban laHashem, nefesh ki techata, nefesh ki techata. Every person needs to know if I, a Baal HaBayit, an ordinary person, right off the street, if I want to bring an olaf, if I want to bring a shlamim, if I want to bring a mincha, if I want to bring a chat, if I have to bring a chatos, what do I have to bring a chatos for? Where do I bring a chatos? What do I bring an asham for? What kind of a chet do I? Right? All of the different categories of when I bring what kind of korban. This is the manual, not for the kohanim, but for
Bnei Yisrael.
They have to know at what point their role in each korban stops and the role of the kohanim continues. Not only that, they also have to know a part of the laws of the Kohanim. Because there's an interesting halacha of in Hilchot Korbanot, which is that if I, as the Baal HaBayit, am bringing a Korban Ola, And when I hand it over, when I do the shechita, and I hand it over to the Kohen, if I intend, if in my mind, if in my thought process, I intend for something to do something with this korban that's not in accordance with the laws set out by the Torah, I could invalidate the korban. I have to have the focus, the mind, of what's involved in this section. So, Parakim Aleph through Hey are the manual for the korbanot given to Bnei Yisrael. Critical. You understand what I'm saying? Perek Vav begins. Tzav et Aaron vet banav lemor. Perek Vav is the manual to the Kohanim. Zot Torat HaOlah. Zot Torat HaMincha. Look at Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemor, daber al Aaron ve'al banav lemor, zot Torat HaChatat. This is all commanded to Kohanim. So it's two separate descriptions precisely because one is the manual given to Klai Yisrael and the other is the manual given to Aaron Uvanov. So far so good, right? Here's the problem. So far everything fits logically. Here's the problem. Look at the last pasuk.
On the page?
Yep. Lamed Zayin Lamed Chet. Zot HaTorah La'olah V'laMincha V'laChatat V'laHashav V'laMiluim V'laZevach HaShlamim Asher Tziva Hashem Et Moshe B'Har Sinai B'Yom Tzavotot B'Nei Yisrael Lakriv Et Korbanehen La'Hashem B'Midbar Sinai. What's the problem with that pasuk?
So it shows it's not chronological.
Right, Vayikra, Tzav. Let's try this one. Right. Well, maybe one of these will work. Let's try this one. Vayikra, Tzav. Vayikra is Daber El Bnei Yisrael. Tzav is Tzav et
Aaron
Uvanav. Vayikra is Adam ki yakriv, Nefesh ki yakriv. When do I bring? What do I bring? Why do I bring korbanot? Tzav is who eats? When do they eat? Where do they eat? You get it? This is Kohen manual. This is Bnei Yisrael manual. When was this manual given? When was this manual spoken and instructed and given to the Kohanim? It says, I just showed it to you. When was this manual given to Bnei Yisrael, spoken, articulated,
driven?
Be'ol Mo'ed. No more.
Is it tiny?
Which came first?
Har Sinai, yeah. Has to be before.
Correct. In other words, chronologically, Parshat Tzav was a given to the Kohanim, instructed, commanded, manual, derived, given to the Kohanim
before.
The Har Sinai before Parshat Vayikra was articulated to Bnei Yisrael.
Right.
You see that?
Yeah.
Fine, but there has to be a logic to it. Eimu mukdam ucha b'tara makes sense, but there has to be a logic to it. It's clear from here that the Parshat Tzav, Perek Vav and Zayin, which is the manual to the Kohanim, was given at Bahar Sinai before Sefer Vayikra was. Parshat Vayikra, Me'ol Mo'ed, is the manual to Bnei Yisrael. But when the Torah was compiled, when Moshe sat down to write the Torah, instead of going chronologically, Hashem said, put Parshat Vayikra, Me'ol Mo'ed, first, and then Parshat Tzav. Why?
Because this is the ABCs of the Korbanot. Like, who's supposed to bring it, what and why are they supposed to bring? And the other's about who's supposed to eat it, when they're supposed to eat it.
Who's
you can't eat it and
out.
Be located anywhere if you didn't have a korban to eat or bring.
In other words, what you're suggesting is that the order here is not chronological, but rather order of?
Procedural.
Procedural or?
Practical, really.
What would happen, a simple question with a simple answer. What would happen if the Torah had written these two parshiot in chronological sequence? First, Vayikra would open up with the description to the Kohanim, Zot Torah Ta'olah, Zot Torah Ta'mincha, Zot Torah Ta'chatat, Zot Torah Ta'asham V'ashlamim. Who eats the korban? When do they eat the korban? Where do they eat the korban? Etc., etc., etc. And then, in Perek Dalet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Echet, I'd have a description of who brings what korban where. What would it look like?
It would be backwards.
You know what it would look like?
Torah?
It's got to be Chaf. Yeah, it's got to go back to what we're doing.
It would look like Chaf and Pinchas. If the Torah had put
the reason that he did all this.
If the Torah had put the whole sequence of the Kohen and who what he could eat and where he could eat, and the as if the korban was the private domain of the Kohanim for their personal
gain.
Rest their bellies type of thing, right? Then the whole concept would have been turned on its ears. So it's true chronologically that may have been articulated to the Kohanim first. But when Sefer Vayikra is written, it has to put the Parshiot in order of importance, in order of significance. The focus is on Adam ki yakriv. The focus is on Nefesh ki yakriv. The focus is on the role of the Korban Chatat, the atonement, the kapara, the smichat yadayim, the spiritual dimension of what each Korban is supposed to bring. Adam ki yakriv Korbano, he has to bring his nefesh and his neshama into the Korban. Ramban is a whole analysis of how each Korban is supposed to look like, as if a person is on the Mizbech instead of them, Korban Chatat, as if it's kind of a replacement, like the aisle at the story of Akedas Yitzchak. If the Torah opened up Sefer Vayikra with the description of what portion of the shlamim the Kohen gets to eat and where he can eat it and when, so that's exactly the manual the Chofni and Pinchas got. They got Perek Zayin, Vav and Zayin. They got this memo. Somehow Chofni and Pinchas didn't get this memo.
They only got this one.
They somehow missed the message.
They got the memo. They didn't do it.
But that's exactly that's exactly the piece of the message that Eli, that the Navi says to Eli. He says, you turned the Korbanot into your personal domain. How much effort did the Torah go to avoid precisely that mistake? Precisely the corruption of the Korbanot, to turn the Korbanot into each Korban is the private personal dinner of menu for the Kohen. If Parshat Tzav was written in its chronological sequence, that would be precisely the message conveyed.
Is it kind of like the leaders are here to serve you? The
Kohanim are the shluchim of Bnei Yisrael. They are the agents of Bnei Yisrael. Right. Bnei Yisrael are not there to serve the Kohanim. The Kohanim are there to serve Bnei Yisrael.
Right.
That's exactly the point.
Right.
If you put the if you put the Torah Korbanot before Torah Kohanim, then the message is Adam first, Nefesh first, Kohen second. Kohen is the shaliach of the Baal Bayit. If you put Torah Kohanim before Torah Korbanot, then you corrupt the message. Then you've turned it backwards. And that's where you get Chofni Pinchas. And the Torah went out of its way. This is it's a remarkable subtlety, but it's in two words. But it flips all of Sefer Vayikra on its heels when you realize that the two prakim of Parshat Tzav, where actually it's a kind of bracketed manual that is written, that is given to the Kohanim long ago, a year ago, 6 months ago, whatever it was, Bar Sinai.
But they didn't.
Right? But says the Torah, in the sequence of Sefer Vayikra, we're writing it second. It's going to go out of its order. Because Torah Korbanot for Bnei Yisrael has to come first, both sequentially and in importance. And that, I think, is the message, the takeaway from the beginning of Sefer Vayikra that is so powerful and so relevant to the story of Chofni Pinchas. So you'll have you will forgive me for introducing you to the world of the guts and gore of the Torah Korbanot, but I thought it was a valuable insight into Sefer Shmuel.
Everybody.